Sadhamam sasangam ime hi sakave hi yatavaham avopite hi apipujayama sadhuno bhante bhagava suchira pavini putopi Pachimajanaka nukampamanasa ime sakale dukata panaka bhute patiganhatu amhakan dihalatan hitaya sukaya Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādhehi savakkhato bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namassāmi Supatipanno bhagavato savakkhasangho sanghaṃ namāmi Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa Iti piso bhagavā arahaṃ Sama Sambuddho Vijacharana Sampanno Sugato Lokavidu Anuttaro Purissa Dhamma Sarati Sata Deva Manusanang Buddho Tamahaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhipujayāmi Tamahaṃ bhagavantaṃ sirasā namāmi Suvākkhato bhagavata dhammo Sannitiko akaliko ehipasiko opanayiko pachatam veditapo vinyuhi tamahaṃ dhammaṃ abhipujayāmi tamahaṃ dhammaṃ Supatipanno bhagavato savakkhasangho Usupatipanno bhagavato savakkhasangho Yayapatipanno bhagavato Savakkhasangho Samijjhipatipanno Bhagavato Savakkhasangho Yadidam chattari purisa yugami Atta purisa pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakkhasangho Ahuneyo Pāra Dahineyo, Dahineyo, Anjali Karaneyo, Anuttaram Punya Ketan Lokasa, Tamahan Sangan Abhipujayami, Tamahan Sangan Sirasanamani. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not busy with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, upwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, freed from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false use, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okie dokie. We now have some questions.
To Ajahn, thank you very much for your guidance on mindfulness of the body. You're welcome. In the afternoon, when my mind became rather quiet, I realized many spots on the body. Oh, you want me to record it? No. Okay. Now this one goes on. This one, the press this way.
Yeah.
Goes in there. Okay. Very good. Excellent. And so. Dear Ajahn, thank you very much for your guidance on mindfulness of the body. In the afternoon, when my mind became rather quiet.
Ajahn.
What?
Can the voice be clearer?
Dear Ajahn. This one here? Is that okay? It's good. It's your ears.
This morning the record is different from last night. Last night.
That must be weird. It must be strange. It must be. Anyway, you've heard the jokes before anyway. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Dear Ajahn La, thank you very much, La, for your guidance on. Okay, let's go back to being serious. Dear Ajahn, thank you very much for your guidance on mindfulness of the body. In the afternoon, when my mind became rather quiet, I realized many spots on the body cried for a cup of tea. No, I said, I should be serious. They cried for help at the same time. Some are aching, some are stiff. Some are more intense than others. I was a bit lost which to attend first. Kindly advise. Indeed, I attended to the one which the loudest voice, when it calmed down, I moved to another. Then it cried again. Should I go back attending it at once or stay with another? I just let the mind decide. That's always the best. Because sometimes if you're attending to one spot on the body which needs some attention to be relaxed, sometimes the other ones relax at the same time. Just give them a chance to be quiet and they get better. But anyway, if another one comes up, okay. Just like all these questions, I don't just finish. And the next question is, in respect to healing the body, you don't just go from half a question and then go to the other questions. One at a time, when one is finished, then the next one can be attended to. Further question, how should I attend the cry? Should I just quietly stay with it, being with it, or should I massage it with mind-made hands? Massaging with mind-made hands is a very good idea. Or should I send metta saying, may you be happy and well, etc. You can do that. Or you just have this beautiful feeling of kindness. Just the soft energy which comes from you. So that is what you're doing is fine. But all of these questions, when you do these things, see what happens. Sometimes having tried something, it doesn't work. So try something else. A little bit of trial and error, and that's how we learn. Until eventually we can do it, and we know exactly what to do with every feeling on our body. Thank you, Ajahn. May you always stay well and full of energy. I don't follow orders. Telling me to stay well, I maintain my right to feel sick. What?
Touch the mic for a second. It's coming out fuzzy.
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 Excellent. Okay.
Try that.
Thank you, Ajahn. May you always stay well and full of energy. Is that good? What were we chanting? To be content and easily satisfied. Anyway, you can hear, okay?
When I listen to that,
but then,
it's very cloudy.
Ah. Yes. Anyway. May you always stay well and full of fuzziness. In respect to healing the body, what is the different effect between deep relaxing sleep and meditation? In meditation, you're peaceful and happy and relaxed. In sleep, it's the same, but when you're meditating, you're there to enjoy it. You're aware. In sleep, you are unaware. That's one of the big differences. And also you can get far deeper in meditation. And also in meditation you can get much more bliss and happiness. But when it comes to healing the body, or sometimes in a deep sleep, sometimes your aches and pains still are there. But in the meditation you can get so much more powerful. The energy is more powerful and more effective. I often feel light-headed. Maybe it's because I'm hungry, but my stomach feels full. It's a dilemma. Help! If your stomach feels full, but your head is light, turn upside down. So the heaviness in your tummy is going to go down to your head, and then you'll be fine. If you're light-headed, it's wonderful to be light-headed than having a heavy head with all the problems. So, yeah, it's light-headed. Make it even lighter. Make it fully light. Make it enlightened. Okay? This is the same words. I can see the writing's the same. I'm hungry, tired, and restless. That's why you keep asking these questions. The same handwriting. The cheese doesn't seem to help. Can I eat something solid? Okay, you can eat something solid. What's solid? You can eat. This is solid. This, I'll give you this. Now, you're hungry, tired, and restless. The cheese doesn't seem to help. You just get used to it after a while. Don't think about the food. And anyway, I shouldn't have said yesterday, I know it was a mistake, to say that even here, that they deliver pizza. But fortunately, the gate is locked at night. So if Bianca gets any calls, say, pizza delivery here, you'll be in big trouble. So hungry, tired and restless, it soon disappears. According to science, you can go without food for days. And you're quite fine. So you're hungry. Wonderful. Just let it be. Just think how healthy that is, that you're losing weight. And I sometimes try to think like that, but it doesn't work. Still put on weight. Tired, the tiredness starts to disappear soon. And restless, if you're restless, where do you want to be? Anywhere but here. But anywhere but here is the same as being here. Where you want to go is the new here. You were there and now you're here. It's all the same. So always remember, the best place to be is nowhere. You know why I always say that's the best place to hang out, nowhere? Because nowhere is a combination of two words. Now and here, yeah. So don't try and go somewhere, be nowhere. And see if you can get nowhere. People keep saying that, they're getting nowhere in meditation. Sadhu, 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 you've got there. Are you getting nowhere? Of course, you're getting now and here. That's what's supposed to happen. Well done. Hey, this is the same person again. Same writing. What is the difference between justice and revenge? Is justice a concept built on delusion? Justice and revenge? Look, it's... revenge is trying to interfere with justice. Justice happens naturally, the balancing of karma. So, it's justice. We all get our just desserts. In fact, we get no desserts this time of night. But other than that, whatever you do, something comes back to you. So you... what is justice? Sometimes people say they want justice, but what was that prisoner down the road at Carnot who taught me about justice? When he came up to me and said, oh, he's been put in prison for something he didn't do. There was a robbery and he was innocent. He didn't do that robbery. And sometimes miscarriages of justice happen. And I thought I knew, you know, going to Carnot prison farm, that sometimes, oh, you can't do anything there. You've got no money, maybe you have one phone call a week or something, and the poor fellow, he's been put in jail for something he didn't do. And I thought, I can't just let that pass me by. I've got to sort of make justice happen by going to call some of my friends, maybe a lawyer, and just get the case reopened. And when I was thinking of all the things I could do, that's when he interrupted my thoughts by saying, but, Ajahn Brahm, I didn't do that robbery for which I was in jail, but I did so many other robberies where I was not caught. I guess that's justice. So if you look at the big picture, all the times you get caught by the speed cameras. Why me? The other fellow was going faster than me. But how many times you complain when you are speeding and there's no camera there? That's really unfair, isn't it? That's unjust. You were speeding and you weren't caught. So because of that, that's the difference between justice. And revenge is when, oh, you just got to make justice happen. But if you do revenge, then that's more karma. Justice has got to come back to you because you, you know, sought for revenge. So anyway, just let karma do its stuff. Could you please explain how to do walking meditation and let go of the body? When you do walking meditation, you put one foot in front of the other, and then another foot in front of the other, and you keep on doing walking meditation. But the most important part of walking meditation is just to one step at a time. And the great advantage of walking meditation, you go in those three halls, or three rooms there, on the red carpet. You ever like walking on the red carpet? It's red. Well, some of it's orange, but it's the closest we can get to red carpet. And you start at one end and go to the other end, and then you turn around and go back again. You all know how to walk? That's how you do walking meditation. The only difference is that you don't go talking to somebody. You don't go looking around because it's pretty boring in there. Nothing to look at. Actually, that clock's still in there. The now clock. That's a lovely clock, that. So it's always the now time. So you start at one end, put your gaze 2 meters in front of you, or body length in front of you, depending on how big you are, and you keep your eyes open, otherwise you bump into the wall. And don't mind what you do to yourself, but it disturbs all the people in here when they're just about to get into jhana and they hear you go, ow! It's not very compassionate, is it? But actually, they've never actually done that bumping in there. There's something called self-preservation. So anyway, just you turn around and you do mindful in this moment. What part of the foot is moving? So you don't let go of the body by doing walking meditation. Just focus on one small part of the body. Eventually, just your foot or that part of the leg moving right now. And little by little, you get really focused. And when you do start to become very peaceful, then the best thing is to come in here and sit down and just do that letting go even further. With the walking, you can get so calm and peaceful, and most of the body disappears, but not all of it. So that's where you have to do the sitting meditation. Ah, this is very, very deep question. This is, so what that means, this way around, that's like a nose, two noses. Maybe it's supposed to be this way around. Two smiles. Do you know what that means? Or maybe this way around? It's in code. Dear Ajahn Brahm, happy 10th anniversary, Jhana Grove. Glad to support it since Jhana Grove just a project plan and now has been established and still growing. I attended October 2009, the weekend retreat here. Huh? Oh, October, yeah. Weekend retreat here, cheers, and they're still coming back, wonderful. So it is, even then, that it was a wonderful asset and also a place where you could have people who didn't have to be really fit and tough and endure pain. All they have to endure here is my bad jokes. So in other words, that you have your own room with ensuite. It's such a wonderful thing to have. And you can meditate in your room if you wish. You don't always have to meditate here. And you have a nice little kitchenette there where you can make your noodles in the evening. Oops. I don't know what you're doing there, but it's up to you just to make use of the place. And it's nicely calm and quiet here. So the place is, you know, the best we can possibly do. And because of this, it does mean that more people can do a meditation retreat without feeling afraid. I always notice that people would do all these photographs of the meditating, the retreatants. And they'd always take the group photograph at the end of the 9-day retreat because that's the only time they were smiling and happy because the retreat was over. And it was torture for some of these people. They had to get up at a certain time. And they had to, so if they didn't get up, they were dragged from their rooms. They had to sit for a certain amount of time, 50 minutes, and you're just about to get into jhanas or enlightened, and bong, you had to get up and do walking. And, you know, you had to sit as you had to eat at a certain time, and all was in quiet. It was just so tight, it was like being in military boot camp without being able to wear boots, just sandals. And so it was just so tough. And some people found benefit from it, but a lot of people didn't. And so a lot of people were actually scared of going on a meditation retreat. So this made meditation open to more people. And also, it got people into deeper meditations. Which was interesting. When I first started teaching these retreats here in Perth, there'd always be schedules. And at a certain time, we'd ring the bell and everyone would go to bed. And they'd ring the bell, you had to get up at a certain time in the morning. And what you found is, now even personally this was happening. Late at night, you're really getting into nice meditation and then you thought, oh, I've got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And so I better go to bed now. And you get up in the morning and you're half asleep. And I thought, why is this going against nature? Isn't it much better if you're really getting good meditation to carry on? You know, whether it's 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and then sleeping in the morning. And to get up for breakfast. You're having really good meditation, so keep it natural. And sometimes you see people, the last meditation, they're just getting very tired, they should go to bed. And then they get up earlier. When they get up earlier, they have really good meditation early in the morning at 3 o'clock. Keep it with natural rhythms. And then you find people do much more meditation. And they're doing it because it's really working. You can't fit your body to an unnatural clock. Imagine, and I always say this, imagine the Buddha under the Bodhi tree in the first watch of the night, who's getting into a certain state of meditation, and in the second watch of the night, go to bed. There would not have been a Buddha, would there? So that's one of the reasons why, to keep it natural. Sometimes you can really get into it, and sometimes if you're tired, take a rest. So your body is healthy. And it's something even more important. You come in here, the mind wants to meditate. There's this phrase I was always impressed with, that the mind leaps to the deep meditation. It's pakandati, is the word. It's the same word like a deer leaps, you know, from one rock to another in the forest. You know, you see something there which is beautiful, peaceful, profound, and the mind just goes for it. Because it's attractive, it pulls you in. And that's the same, you have a deep, good meditation, a nice place to meditate, you can't wait, especially to get here and do some meditation. And it doesn't, you don't think of the time, it's enjoyable, you keep on going, the mind gets satisfied. Do you have to force yourself to have breakfast in the morning? No, the mind leaps to it. Because it finds joy and happiness there, and fulfillment. So imagine that was the same with meditation. You know, you think it's, you're not thinking, oh, just when is the breakfast time, when is the lunch, and what we're having for lunch today. Instead, you think, ah, meditation, what jhana am I going to have today? We had first jhana yesterday, let's try second jhana today. Whatever, you actually leap towards the meditation. So anyway, that's why it's putting the facilities in a way that can assist people to make an attractive place. As a social being, we can't help internalize societal values, such as having high education, getting a good job, getting a nice partner, etc. Of course you can help these things. We feel pressurized and unhappy when we can't achieve what the society says we should have. Please help us deal with this pressure in a skillful way if we are not ready to ordain yet. Three lowest vows. It's, well, just, if you can't sort of change your education, good job, nice partner, etc., change your society. Hang out with wise people who measure others not by their salary or whether they're by their partner or having a high education. I knew so many people who had some of the highest educations and they were just total waste of time. That was one of the reasons, going to Cambridge University and seeing some of these professors who were brilliant in their fields, but, you know, socially they were a mess. They weren't happy, they were depressed. And even though they're brilliant in front of the blackboard, there was that time I think I mentioned having dinner with Roger Penrose up in the Jinjin Gravity Center. Of course, you know, I didn't have any dinner, but I didn't go there for the meal. It was just to meet, you know, somebody who was really famous. And because I hadn't met him before, because he was from Oxford. And I, no one, none of us at that sort of event, it was only about 15 or 20, could actually have a conversation with him. You know, I just, you know, he was by himself, so I started talking to him about theoretical physics and the nature of the uncertainty and just, you know, how a mind can actually be bigger than all of this. And he was just not interested at all. But I thought maybe it's because he's not interested in the spiritual side of science, but people would have conversations with him about all sorts of other things, and he was a wallflower. His social skills were absolutely nil. And in the end, I was just sitting next to this NASA scientist having a really interesting conversation. I don't know what she was doing there, but, you know, she's a really interesting woman. And then he was just standing there, just in a crumpled suit, like a wallflower. And just, I thought, I'm glad I never chose the option of being a great scientist and being a monk, having an emotional intelligence rather than the intellectual intelligence. High education, do you really want that? Good job. I always say, and this is not just a joke, if you get a promotion, it's just more stress. Aren't you satisfied with the stress you've got already? Don't think about it as more money and more prestige. Think of it as more stress. Less sort of free time when you get sort of a promotion. And sometimes you wonder what you're doing that for. And a nice partner, partners start out very nice. True, isn't it? And sometimes it's a bit downhill. Then you get to reality. If you get to reality quickly, that, you know, look at your partner, and they're just not what you expected, but that's what she thinks about you. So I say, you're a great disappointment to me. And she, yes, the same the other way around too. But when you come to reality. As often that saying that suffering is asking from this world something it can never give you. That's suffering. Asking from this world something it can never give you. And so a partner who lives up to your expectations, who lasts for such a long time, if they are a good partner, then they go and die and they leave you. And so it's life. As long as you read the contract, first of all, the small print, they know the partner can die at any time. And they're a different human being than you. There's many things you share in common, but many differences. So be careful to allow those differences. And never sort of judge. The partner can give you so much, can reflect so much about, you know, who you are, what you do. They can only take you so far. So the same with education, a nice partner. Societal pressures, they're only pressures if you allow them to influence you. So that's why we sometimes say, no, this is who I am, this is what I'm going to be. And a lot of time people are actually jealous of you. They think, I wish I could do that. I wish you could just even have a lower ranking job, but have more happiness. You have a partner. If you really want a partner in life, I recommend a dog. Or a cat. It's true, I mean, dogs never argue with you. And you can leave them at home and you can go out and they don't sort of interrogate you where you've been and who you've been with. They don't ask for a bigger kennel every year. An upgrade, please. That's right. Anyway, so oppressed and unhappy, we don't achieve what society says we should have. You will never achieve it. What society wants you to have. There's always something more. I was actually when I got quite a few disciples and friends in Cathay Pacific. Whenever I go over to Hong Kong, they always give a talk at the Cathay City in Hong Kong. And one day they took me inside, you know, to see the mock-up aircraft which they train all the cabin staff on. And, you know, in the first class and all these other amazing places. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be wonderful, you know, if you could go and stay or go for a trip in the suites. You've got your own little compartment there. And you've got a hot shower. And you can eat whatever you want whenever you want it. I thought, wow, look at that. And they said, no, that's just nothing these days. Because once you get to that class, of course the next one is having your own private aircraft. And so there's always something more. You can never actually live up to other people's expectations. Because those expectations have no limit. So it's much better to just make up your own what you think is happiness and peace. And people can see you're content. Content and easily satisfied with what you have. And that is what society looks up to. People who are peaceful, happy, content. So that becomes the goal. Societal goal. I'm restless today. How can I recharge when my mind is everywhere? Wow, it's everywhere. I thought somebody was watching me today when I was taking a nap after lunch because I was very tired. I hope you weren't in my toilet when I was sitting down there. It's not everywhere, but it's where you don't want it to be. And there you find the problem. So, be happy that your mind is here, there, and all over the place. The solution to the problem is, still sticking on the travel metaphor, when I travel overseas, people ask, you get tired of traveling? I say, I don't travel. I don't go anywhere. You're sitting on a plane, I'm always here. The plane travels, it's the plane which moves. I just sit still. So when people say they're going to be here next week, so I'm always here. So sometimes it's a different country. So I'm always here. I don't go anywhere. It changes the perception. In all your life, where have you gone? You've always been here. You haven't gone anywhere. Just things outside change. So this whole idea of travel and going and being everywhere, put a different perspective on it and it changes everything. You don't go anywhere. Things come in front, but I'm always here just watching them. My mind isn't restless. Different things come. This image, that image, another image, another image. Be always in this moment. You can only have one image at a time. So see if you can keep in the present moment. Just be here. And then restlessness, what the heck does that mean? So you recharge when your mind is everywhere. Oh, just let your mind go wherever it wants. And then while the mind is off doing busyness, then you can actually do your recharging. It's a dilemma. I try sleeping, but my mind wanders off. Oh, where does it wander to? So if it does, hold its hand and go with it. Okay, mind, you can take me wherever you want to go. And see what happens. It's only a problem when you resist it and you control it. You don't want it. You want something else. You think that something is wrong. You think that you are not good enough. You think you can't meditate. You think all this stuff and ideas of what meditation is. And it's, you'll be peaceful. This is this moment. So let it be. Open the door of your heart to your restlessness. Let it be. And that undermines the very cause of restlessness. It goes somewhere, you're with it, you're aware, the mind is somewhere. But if you want it to be with the breath, then that's, you're in trouble. That's what you really mean, right? It's restlessness. You're aware of something, but it's not what you think you should be aware of. And you call that restlessness. It's not that, it's just uncontrollable. So stop trying to control your mind. Be kind to your mind. If you're kind to your mind, it wants to go somewhere, let it go. What's that old story? The old stories of the mother whose 6-year-old son decided to leave home for the first time. I don't love you anymore, mummy. I'm going. And most mothers would just shout, you can't go anywhere. Wait till your daddy comes home. You're in big trouble, blah, blah, blah. But what this mummy did, oh, you want him to leave home? Good idea. I've never had any children, but you know, sometimes I can imagine that with your children driving you crazy. And they say they want to leave home. Ooh, that's a good idea. But this wasn't trying to get rid of the kid. This was a woman who had this amazing emotional intelligence. So she said to her kid, yeah, okay, I'll help you pack. So they packed all the important things of life, the Superman suit, the jelly beans, or whatever the kid wanted to take with him in his journey through life. And mummy made, and this is an important part, that mummy said, well, what do you want to eat? What's your favorite food? So they made him like a peanut and jam sandwich and put it in a brown paper bag. So, because you do need, you know, some sustenance on your journey through life. So, and have a wonderful life, son. Don't forget to sort of write every now and again. And so kissed the son, bye-bye. And there the son leaving home for the first time with a suitcase, a tiny suitcase, and the lunch for the journey. Bye. And what happened, of course, the kid just, apparently they had one of these houses with, you know, the garden in the front, so went to the garden path, the little gate, left, you know, turned left after going through, opening the gate and passing through, and then off it went. The kid left home for the first time, 6 years of age. Because of the kindness and letting it go, what happened? About 20 meters down the road, 30 meters down the road, the kid was homesick already. Turned around, walked back, opened the gate, came and hadn't even eaten a sandwich yet, and just, mum was waiting. Welcome home, darling. That was great psychology, emotional intelligence, wisdom. Let it go. If you're such a kind person, you let it go, it comes back again really quickly. Who would want to leave a mother like that? In fact, every time we were hungry, she says, right, that's it, I'm leaving. Where's my sandwich? But because it was, the mum was kind, that is one of the reasons why. It sort of would come back pretty quickly. But if you say, no, you can't leave, you're too long to leave. No, can't. Wait. And of course, that drives the kid further away. So little by little, we understand our mind. Come on, stay with the breath. Wait till Ajahn Brahm comes. He's going to... And using fear and punishment and stuff. Oh, the mind wants to go. Off you go. Have a nice, lovely time. For years... And I would be taught, when the mind wanders off, bring it back. 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 Mind wanders off. When is this going to work? How many times do I have to do this? And in the end, say, hey, if the mind leaves and wanders and restless, why? Why does it want to go away? And instead of just repeating this exercise, bring it back endlessly, why does it want to leave in the first place? It's because this is not a nice place to be. Because you're not being kind to it. It doesn't like you. It's not a healthy, lovely place. That's why people leave. So, instead of keeping on bringing the mind back, just make this such a wonderful place for your mind to be. Kind, non-judgmental, joyful, fun, playful. And then the mind wanders off. Nah, I prefer to stay with my friend. So it stays with you. That is how we overcome the wandering, restless mind. Not through force, through kindness. You make a prison for your mind, it will find a way out. But if you make a beautiful, happy place for your mind, joyful in this moment, who wants to go anywhere? So that's what happens. After a while, you get the joy. Telling a little bit about the joy, the delightful relaxation you feel in the body when, you know, everything is nice and comfortable. Just the same feeling as when you're in your bed and just, you're just like tucked in and nice and warm and stretch out. Oh, this feels really good. That is a sort of joyful feeling that you just want to be here. So that's one of the reasons why. When you have that contentment, joy, that is why she becomes, you don't sort of go anywhere. Mind doesn't wander off anywhere. Use wisdom, power, kindness. Next question. How does a person know if she has attained Sotapanna? If they ask the question like that, then they certainly have not. In other words, why is a person concerned about attainments and levels? It shows that there's still a sense of stream winning being an attainment, just like other attainments you have in life. Stream winning is not about attainments. It's all about seeing the thing which attains. The sense of self and ego is starting to vanish and disappear. And you realize all this stuff about attainments and goals is the very antithesis of being a stream winner. So in the end, stream winning is just you're disappearing, your sense of self vanishing. And how do you know that? Because your possessions, the mind, and the minefield which a sense of self creates, literally the minefield of all your possessions. If someone steps on it, they get blown up. You get too close, bang. So all the things which you think are yours, especially your attainments on the path, the things which you, another thing to measure yourself with. So what is that lovely little tale about stream winning? In a meditation center somewhere where this old granny visiting her children, and the children thought, what can we give, you know, our grandma, our auntie, such a simple person, what present can we give her? And there was a meditation retreat center which would do really quite long retreats. I forget, there were 30 days or 60 days. Meditation and also lectures, and also like being in a university or a school, no tutorials, and at the end, the examination and the results. So, the faculty members there, they would actually ask the questions about your meditation. What did you see? How did it happen? and questions about their understanding of the Dhamma. And at the end, they came and went right up to this old auntie and said, "Auntie, you've done really well. We've just examined your case and your meditation, your understanding of the Dhamma, and we're very pleased to let you know that you are a stream winner." And they gave her the certificate, stream winning certificate. Just like, you know, when you go to university and you get a bachelor's or something, give you congratulations. At which point, she got very angry. "So what are you getting angry for? This is an amazing achievement, a stream winner on the path to enlightenment. No longer possible to go reborn in the lower realms. You should be delighted. So much suffering as the great journey through samsara has been overcome. Why are you so upset?" And she looked at them and said, "You don't remember me, do you?" And that got them worried. When anyone says that to me, "You don't remember me, do you, Ajahn Brahm?" I said, "Oh goodness, what have I done?" Reminds me of a joke. I'll go back to the main story in a moment. I don't know if I should say this, but I've already gone too far, so here it comes. About the boy at school. He's really getting short of cash. And just, you know, he asks his, one of his best friends, he said, "Oh, can you lend me sort of a few dollars?" He said, "No, of course I can't, but I really need it." He said, "Look, I'll give you some advice. You know, your sister, sort of in a one or two classes older, go up to her and just say, 'Sister, I know all about it.' And see what happens." And so he went up to his older sister and said, "Sister, I know all about it." She said, "Who told you?" He said, "Oh, you know, we've got friends in school, you know, we know and know." And he said, "Don't tell Mum or Dad." I said, "It'll cost you $20. So here you are, but don't tell Mum or Dad, okay? Fine. And it's just, he didn't know anything, but you know, nobody knows, you know, all the stuff if you keep secret. So he said, "Oh, this is really good." So that evening, you know, to see how much it would work, he went to his mum and said, "Mum, I know all about it." "How do you know?" "Well, you know, just some of the friends at school, you know, there's many families, you know, go to school, we talk to one another." She said, "How much?" $50, and I won't spread a word about it. "Here we go, $50, but don't ever tell your dad." Then he went up to his dad and said, "Dad, I know all about it." "And $100, and I won't tell your mum. I'll tell your wife." And he said, "Oh, okay." And then, having exhausted his immediate family, the postman called. So he went to the postman and said, "Postie, I know all about it." You know what the postman did? The postman said, "You know all about it?" He said, "Yes, son." It's a bit of a naughty joke. But anyway. So anyway, what was the question anyway? Oh yeah. "Do you remember me?" He said, "No, we don't know who he is." And she said, "I was here about 4 or 5 years ago. And last time I was here, you gave me a non-returner certificate. You demoted me." So that's the point. Attainment is not about sort of personal medals which you can pin on you somewhere, or certificates you can hang, because there's no place to hang it on. There's no sense self you can actually put the pin in to actually to hold it. In other words, the idea of being a stream winner is your vanishing. And to be, this is the serious part, the arahat, fully enlightened. One of the suttas, that this monk came up to the Buddha, the attendant Ananda was sitting right next to the Buddha, and they said to the Buddha, "So one who is an arahat fully enlightened never thinks they are better than anybody else, or worse than anyone else, or the same as anyone else. We said, yeah, well done, yes, exactly. And then another monk came up to say the same thing, just about one who has, you know, ended samsara, never feels they're better than anyone else, worse or the same as anyone else. Yeah. And the Buddha turned around to Ananda and said, that's how two fully enlightened beings tell me about, you know, what they've just seen. It's not about being better. I'm a stream winner. What about you? Stream winner. Oh, I did that years ago. I'm now a once returner. Once returner? All these years you've been in robes. I'm a non-returner. Non-returner? I'm an arahat. Arahat? How many psychic powers have you got? I've got more psychic powers than you have. You can obviously, that is nothing to do just with the Dhamma. It's not competing against one another. It's not sort of the ego battles. Who's more advanced than the other? It's all about letting go of all of that. So you never think you're the better, the worse, the same. There's no career advancement. It's all about disappearing. Your sense of self and ownership, just going. The least you think you are, the more you're closer to liberation. Okay, the one who knows the knower, is it a different knower or was it like a mirror looking at its own reflection in another mirror? The knower. The knower just knows what happened a few moments ago. So you add time into it. The one who knows the one who knew. In other words, knowing takes an object. Can you actually see the moon? Have you seen the moon tonight? That's the old moon. Because it's, what was it, a few seconds? You know, after actually all that light takes a while to get to your, you know, from the moon to here. And then when it gets to here, it takes a few seconds before it sort of goes, or milliseconds before it gets processed by your visual cortex. And then it presents itself to your consciousness. It takes time. So you never see things as it happens. You see things as it were. A few seconds ago, even my voice, you hear it, it's already gone by the time you're conscious of it. It's past. So it's the knower especially. The knower just has as his object the previous act or previous object. It's not you think, therefore you are. You think old thoughts. I know that I knew. That's as far as it goes. It's not its own reflection in another mirror. Dear Champaram, thank you for your inspiring teachings. Really? I feel a bit lost when meditating by myself. Could we have some guided meditation, please? Oh my goodness. It gets really busy for me and it's really hard to find a time to do guided meditation, so you can actually do it on your tablets or whatever, but hang on. How many people would like a guided meditation, say in the afternoon? Only two or three? Okay, so we don't have any guided meditations? You feel a bit lost in meditating by myself. It is actually a long time in the afternoon. So, what's the solution?
Nuns.
Get you to earn your meals here. How many times did it say in Australia, no such thing as a free lunch? Think that's a good idea? How many people think we should get the nuns to do some work? Maybe let's not put it like that. Amy Pink thinks a good idea for one of the nuns to teach a guided meditation in the afternoon. Right, more hands are coming up. Shall we give it a try? So, sisters, you're in trouble now. Who's the senior? I told you, just when you get some promotion, it's always more stress. So that's Venerable Anusara. How long have you been a nun now?
Since
Bikuni. Seven rains. Wow. Okay. So, hands up if you think that Venerable Anusara should give a guided meditation in the afternoon. Wow, more people. It gets more people up and up. Okay, so what's a good time in the afternoon? 3 o'clock? 4 o'clock? 2 o'clock? 1 o'clock? 6 o'clock? I know there is the, usually just a guided meditation, half an hour? 40 minutes? Half an hour? Start with half an hour. So tomorrow, half an hour, 3 o'clock till 3:30? It's a good time. 2:30 to 3. Why not we have it from 11 to 12? That was thought out. Who really wants to be a string reader or not? I think for the afternoon period, maybe 3 to 3:30, or maybe going to 3:45. When you do a guided meditation, what we usually do is we give the guided meditation for about 30 minutes or 25 minutes and then let people just carry on if they feel that they're getting peaceful. Shall we try that? Okay, so you're in trouble now. 3:30 to 3:45 or something. Is that okay for you? Yay! Okay. Okay. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. But if you don't like it, you can always pass it down the line. Who's next in line? Whoa. So what you should say is, tell others, no, no, you're such a good teacher. And they say, oh no, I can't match you. Okay, next question. While the mind is still busy, negative thoughts and fault finding arise, should one make them the most important thing or use the effort to restrain? Thank you. I make them the most important thing. They're just teaching you about negativity. You look at negativity. What is negativity? Just let it be. And again, negativity, be positive about the negative mind. It's fault finding, you see the fault finding. The fault finding teaches you a lot about the Dhamma. So it's really important. So don't find fault with the fault finding mind. It's really there to teach you a good lesson. When you're depressed, I always say depression can be really interesting and fascinating. Especially when you're bored. Because boredom is sometimes where you get starting off from the restlessness, comes from boredom. What is actually boredom? What does boredom feel like? Where is it manifested on your body? Because many of the emotions, actually you can feel them on the body. Anxiety, you get tense up inside. You get angry, you get really hot. You can actually feel like the heat improving your body, increasing your body. And when you are bored, what does it feel like? And how does it develop? So you know, really get to be an expert, a knowledgeable expert on boredom. And boredom becomes one of the most interesting subjects. And once you get interested in boredom, it's not boring anymore, is it? Once you actually accept that fault finding is a part of life, you don't find fault with it anymore. Once you see that mistakes happen, and mistakes are great, then, of course, there's no problem anymore.
just like the one time over in Thailand, we used to stay in a cremation ground in Thailand, and there were lots of ghosts there in the cremation. I mean, there were, really were ghosts there in the cremation ground, and especially when people were just freshly burned. And that's why in this monastery we had these Thai novices, you know, young people. And whenever there was a cremation that day, they would never stay by themselves. The problem was this night, the cremation was done on that night of the week where all the monks had to stay up meditating. Normally, the little novices would stay up for an hour or two and then sneak off to the little kutis in the forest. And they're only young kids, so that was fair enough. We knew what they were doing, just let them go. But this night, there had just been a fresh cremation. And this little novice, he didn't dare go outside of the hall into the dark forest to where his hut was. His hut was too far away. So he decided to stay in the hall as long as he could, knowing the ghosts were lurking outside, ready to jump on him whenever he went outside. Because he saw too many movies like that in Thailand about ghosts. So he stayed and endured and endured and stayed. But it wasn't the sleepiness which really got him. He really needed to go to the toilet. And he was holding it in. He really needed to go, but the toilet was about 50 meters through the forest in the darkness. And he was holding himself, he really needed to go, but he was too scared to go until the crunch point came. So he decided to try his luck and ran to the toilet block through the darkness, holding his flashlight. He got to the toilet block. He went inside the cubicle and he closed the door and he squatted on the Asian squat toilets. And he hadn't been there maybe about 1 minute, and he heard the sound of footsteps coming. Bop, 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 bop. Right outside his cubicle door. That was strange. But what he heard next was, what can I do this on? Scratching on the rough wooden door. And that poor novice, whoa, he stayed inside that cubicle for about 3 or 4 or 5 hours until it became light. And only, we always know, where is he gone? He did say it wasn't in his heart. He was still in the cubicle. And when he came out eventually, oh, he wasn't tired. How can you go asleep when there's a ghost scratching to come in outside? But when he did come out, it was light, we're getting ready to go on arms round. And he said, the ghost, really this ghost, and they almost came to get me. I was in the toilet and he came to scratch on the door trying to get in. But I stood my ground. Well, I didn't stand my ground. I was squatting my ground. And I stayed in there for about 4 or 5 hours until it was light and safe to come out. I don't know why people think that ghosts only come out at night time. I wonder, what do they do during the daytime? Did they sleep? Did they go to sleep? Where did they go to sleep? So anyway, but he was so afraid. And of course, we all knew that ghost. It was well known in that monastery. It was called Civet Cat. The civet cats who actually lived in the forest, beautiful little animals, and they would always come in the evening, in the squat toilets, to get a drink. Just water, because it's very convenient. They didn't know that was a toilet bowl. It was really good. It had water in the bottom and it was flat on the ground, so they could go in there and just have a nice little drink in the middle of the hot night. So it wasn't a ghost, it was a civet cat. And so this is what happens sometimes when we misunderstand. We make mistakes. It wasn't a ghost. It was just ordinary stuff. So anyway, so instead of having negative thoughts, it really is a ghost. Wonderful. How many people have actually done an in-depth interview of a ghost? If you've got a smartphone, when you go out and you see a ghost, get a selfie. Ask the ghost nicely, ghost, would you mind, please? Because it's really rare. And so get the ghost and you. Nice smile. You hand around the ghost, that'd be really cool. And imagine, put that on Instagram or whatever. Wow, you'll be a YouTube sensation. You'll go viral. You want to try that? No, why not? Anyway, because somebody asked if I could tell them a ghost story, so that's the best I could do. Because they've heard my other ghost stories. I've heard you explain right effort as the effort to stop, to restrain from unwholesome thoughts and words and deeds. But what about the other parts of right effort? Exercising effort to cause whatever wholesome states to arise. How do wholesome states arise? You know, kusala states. How do they come into being? You try to make wholesome states come into being, what happens? You get stressed. So you find that the best effort is the effort to stop, to renounce, to be kind, to be gentle, to be patient. It's a sort of effort, but not the effort which people usually understand by that word. It takes some mindfulness and some also like strictness, restraint. That is a type of effort to give up and let go. And it's arisen wholesome states to arise and arisen wholesome states to grow to fulfillment. That's how they grow to fulfillment. Just like planting a forest or planting an orchard or planting a garden. Your job, once those things are in there, is to protect them and guard them to make sure they're not damaged. It's a guarding. It's a stopping. It's a trying to make sure that things don't come in. That is the best way. So it's not really active. It's like a restraint. A letting go, a putting in barriers. So, not barriers, that's not the best word. Making this moment sort of so attractive, happiness, but not the negativity of what most people say effort. The point is that words, we translate from Pali to English, and sometimes we get those words wrong. One of those words which is really terribly wrong was when they translated samadhi as concentration. Now that's the last of the Eightfold Path, the right samadhi. Because when it's concentrated, it's hard. Yes, you let go. When it's concentration, it's hard, it's tough, and you can't maintain it, there's no happiness there, it's unstable. You know the old story of how do you keep the water perfectly still? By letting it go. You see, and you don't need to do anything. Somebody else comes and does it for you, so that no effort. But that's even concentration. Concentration is force. It's effort to concentrate. and you can't maintain that effort. Letting go, stillness, peace, kindness, that is maintainable, soft, peaceful force. And also the concentration effort, where does it come from? From you. It's the effort, the control, the force makes an ego stronger and stronger and stronger. That's actually the fuel for your ego. Effort. Who are you anyway? It's all that struggle you have to do, all of those achievements in your life, you know, your degrees, your building, your your assets. You've strived for them, and that's what defines you. Imagine, as a monk, you let go. Even this place, put so much effort into building this place. It's not mine, never will be. It's run by the Buddhist Society. So, you let go. So the effort is what lessens the sense of self. So effort creates a stronger sense of self. And letting go just dissolves the sense of self. It's not concentration, it's stillness. So, and I have an idea what stillness means. You can't force stillness. Stillness is a base state. What Ajahn Chah used to say, when the wind doesn't blow, then the lake gets more and more still. The reason why the lake has got waves and ripples on the surface, the thoughts, the disturbances, the defilements, it's only because the wind is blowing from somewhere. The wind of wanting, of effort. When that wind stops, the lake becomes still all by itself. It's peace. It's a wonderful thing about Dhamma. Sometimes we try effort. And we get so far, we can't get any further. Still have no happiness, no peace, no freedom. The sense of self is still strong. But when we learn how to let go, really let go, which means letting go of our will, our effort, then we become so peaceful. And all those things we strive for, they come to us. Deep, deep, deep stillness. Bliss, body vanishing, deep meditations, jhanas. And all the time, it's disappearance. You don't do jhanas. It's what happens when you stop doing things, when the effort stops. We know that sometimes through effort, through really strong will, you can get into nimittas, but that's about as far as you can go. You're blocked. Because you can't let go to get in the next stage of the jhanas. You can't let go of your body. You've got all that way and you can't let it go. So that's one of the problems. The sooner we start letting go, sitting here, you can sit here much longer when you don't do effort. You're peaceful, you don't want to go anywhere. So this is where the letting go is always more powerful than effort. And the effort can only take you so far. It's not really the path. Dear Ajahn, I have pain, lots of pain, everywhere. That reminds me of that person who went to see his doctor and said the same thing. It hurts everywhere. What do you mean? Explain to me. Well, I've touched my head and it hurts. My ear, it hurts. My nose, it hurts. My throat, it hurts. My chest hurts. My knee hurts. Should I know your problem? You've got a broken finger. Now that's not just a joke, because there's something really deep in that. Lots of pain everywhere. Why? If it really is everywhere, it is the mind is hurting. I try to love it, make friends with it, show it compassion, but it doesn't leave me. Are you trying to get rid of it? If you want it to leave, then that's the reason why it's painful. How do I divorce myself from pain? Help. You don't divorce yourself. Your sense of self vanishes. The idea, this is my pain, is pain. And when you have nothing to compare it with, of course it's just feeling. As some person said a long time ago, you always remember that what is pain anyway? Pain is just the gap between two moments of pleasure. You could say peace if you like. But if you have pain all the time, really all the time, you don't notice it. Even Saint Augustine, the Christian theologian, used to say that every person who goes up to heaven, one day a year you have to spend in hell. Otherwise you wouldn't realize it was heaven for the rest of the 364 days. There was a lot of truth to that. If you're in bliss all the time, you wouldn't really appreciate it. Because your mind and even your brain only notices things which change. It notices changes. Heat, cold, smell, sound, ambient temperature, which is always there, you don't notice it. Be careful there. It's change which we see. Change is suffering. If it's like that all the time, we become not percipient of it. Look, I've heard you say in talks, when a loved one is in a coma, etc., and the family has to decide whether to keep them on artificial life support or pull the plug, you should ask the person, even if it seems they cannot communicate normally with you. Do you think there's another point then in making living wills, document where one states in advance what one's wishes are, should one fall in such a way? What if the person said in advance they don't want to be kept on life support? When it actually happens, they might for some reason want the life support after all, e.g. they know they will come from the coma. It is given a little more time, or if they are not ready to die yet, or whatever. There have been stories of such nature told by people who have survived comas. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on this. Yeah, people change their mind. They have a living will. So, you know, just when I sort of get sick, just, you know, please don't feed me or whatever. But what we decide today, are we going to do tomorrow? We do change our mind. And even to the point, there was these weird cases, not very nice cases, of people who decided to commit suicide by jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco. It's a long way down. Some people actually survived. And they actually said what it was like. And they said all those people who actually survived that fall, I think was it nearly all of them, when they were halfway down, changed their minds. They didn't want to die. How many people are like that? Sometimes we say, yeah, okay, I've had enough, I want to die, but then, the last moment, no, we change our minds. So having a living will, what does it mean by a living will? It means it does change and it alters. But that's not really what the law means. The law does that as a sense of giving some legal clarity. But it's allowed to be updated. What about updated at the last moment? That's why sometimes it's nice to be able to contact someone you love, care for, you've been with for a long time, just at that moment, what do you want? Are you ready to die? Do you want to carry on? That's always the best. So it's a difficult one. That doesn't really help legal systems. When they want a living will, they want something in black and white. So they can say, okay, just don't turn the machine off. So it gives some protection and means that it makes it easier, I suppose, it's never easy, for the loved ones to decide, to make a decision. They say, oh no, they've already decided they don't want to be prolonged. But when did they say that? Is it still valid? So sometimes it's nice to be able to just feel that person, look at them, and just see if you can know where they're at, whether they've had enough, whether they want to die. Okay, that's a pain one. Well, please excuse me if I don't go through these last ones too quickly. Could you please explain the walking meditation process? Do we concentrate on our body or breathing? Do we look front or down towards the feet? Please explain. As mentioned earlier, you look about body length in front of you. The only reason for that is so that you feel safe. If you're going to relax and become peaceful, that safety is an important part. And that's why we keep precepts here, so you can just meditate here calmly, knowing that no one's going to harm you or hurt you in this place. And so that concentrate on our body or breathing. Don't concentrate, and remember that's a word which you focus, mindful of just the feet moving. So lift up, move forward, and always in this moment, just like the breath meditation or any other type of meditation, now's the most important time, the only time you have the feeling in front of you as you're walking, the most important, and just be kind. Keep it as simple as possible, and because you're keeping it simple and kind, the mind relaxes a lot. There'll be more instructions on that afterwards, but I'm just going a bit over. How can a non-English speaker join this retreat? How will they understand you, Ajahn? When I was training with Ajahn Chah, he could speak no English, but still, you get a lot of information about his methods and his way of teaching. And when people said, how come Ajahn Chah had so many Western disciples? The answer was from Ajahn Chah, it's so easy teaching Western disciples. It's the same as in the village how we would train water buffalo. We pull them this way, kick them that way until they could do it properly. And that's how Ajahn Chah described Westerners. Water buffalo. So anyway, I always got this when I'm telling my family I'm going to retreat. It's a shame I can't speak English, if not I would have joined. So, hey. Anyway, sometimes on retreats we have retreats run by the Indonesian group, and afterwards they just go into the kitchen and they just take the notes and just give the instructions. So you get the instructions. Instructions are easy to find, but what really is helpful is actually just to get the that which cannot be said, just the ambience, the energy, or whatever else you call it, just how everybody else being peaceful. Remember, like I did this for so many years with Ajahn Chah. First few years didn't really understand much of what he was saying, but you can feel his presence, and that calms you down. Is it advisable to consistently practice walking and sitting meditation in one specific method for this retreat? No, change. Are you for walking a mantra, let go from one foot to the other, body scan or turning for sitting, do a thorough body sweeping and then breathe in peace out, let go? No. Just whatever works. Do you always eat the same food every breakfast and lunch every day on this retreat? So you change it around, because when you change things around a little bit, that does make it more easy to watch. It all leads eventually to the same thing. All these meditations all lead to just peace and wisdom, and all food leads to one of two things. The brown or the yellow. Come on, you knew that was coming. Doesn't matter what type of food it is, it always comes out brown. It's amazing, isn't it?
So, swap it around. My daily meditation is clearly influenced by what is happening in my life. Precious business relationships. On retreat, greater stillness is possible. Can this stillness be found in daily meditation, not retreat? I continue to live a busy, pressured life. I could have written that question. I live a busy, pressured life. It's amazing if I told you all the stuff we have to get up to as a senior monk. But you know how to put it down, let it go. You don't have to carry things all the time. And in fact, if you learn how to let things go, and don't worry so much about things, stop doing things, and then when you come back to your work after 15 minutes, half an hour, 2 hours, however long it is, you're energized, you're clear, and then you can be far more productive. I do work hard, but I'm a very productive monk. You get lots of things done. So, it's not about effort, but productivity. And productivity means resting. Learning how to be still. Last. I changed posture about 3 times in 1 hour sitting. Is it okay to readjust the posture? Of course. I also try to be aware of the urge to change and acknowledging it. Excellent. No worries, mate. If it works, fine. And you find if you move the posture, after a while you don't want to move your posture. You're happy. Peaceful. Keep it natural. When the body vanishes, disappears, you don't even feel the body. So you don't have to move. But now is the time to move. Because it is 9:30. And time to go. So what do we do before we go? Sadhu! 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 Oh, come on, you can be better than that. It wasn't that late. He, he, he. Okay. So have a wonderful night. If you wish to be, don't have to. It's always up to you. And just if you feel you've got energy, carry on meditating. If you feel tired, take a rest. See what happens. So thank you for those questions. And there's a lot tonight of questions. So you can try and keep the questions simple and not so many. And then that means that we can actually, some of the ones at the very end were just rushed through because it was getting late, so sorry about that. And tomorrow, same schedule. Those of you who want to get up for the chanting or a bit before for meditating, if you wish to, you don't have to, you can meditate in your room. If you want to do chanting, you can always do chanting in your room. Many people prefer chanting in their room. And we have the breakfast. And then after the breakfast, the talk, and after the talk, my interviews start tomorrow. So please keep it to 10 minutes, no longer. And please don't have like personal stuff about families or divorce proceedings or wills and stuff. Because they're gone forever. So keep it simple, to meditation if at all possible. And then after that, lunch, and after lunch, in the afternoon. Those want interviews, 3 till, but you can't have an interview in the afternoons. Otherwise, you won't be doing the guided meditation. And it's a guided meditation in the afternoon. So please, support our nuns. So just listening, and at the end of the guided meditation, say, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And see what happens. Okay. So good night.